Everyone, welcome back to the Nuanced Podcast. I'm Amanda White.
And this is Sam Dalton, and we're together.
We are. I always feel like whenever we do this, we're like on a radio show or something weird. Yeah. So we were thinking of doing an episode where you guys give us lots of ideas, and sometimes, and I have this giant list, and we have this joke that the list is where the ideas go to die, because we never actually do them off of the list. We thought today maybe what would be fun is we would take a look at the list and give our over level high view thoughts.
Yeah. Like first top of the dome.
Yes. As more of a snorkel, and we'll do different topics and who knows, we could eat our words and just go deep into one of them too. You never know with us.
It's why you signed up to listen to this, because you don't know what you're going to get. And it's exciting to see where we're going to go and the ideas we're going to have. And that's that. So Amanda is the keeper of the list.
I have the list. By the way. Okay, this is a really weird one that I'm just going to start with.
What is it?
This is so fun. I have, are we overusing headphones? Question mark. Is this making our anxiety worse?
Headphones?
Yeah, I read a Substack that was like, we need to not wear headphones all the time because it's like a way we're
like disengaging
from life. And
was this a suggestion or was this you?
No, this was just me. Oh, yes. It's a Substack that I read called Your Headphones Are Making Your Anxiety Worse.
I will say, now that I am taking public transit a lot more where I live, I do not wear headphones.
Oh.
One, I think it's a little bit of a safety thing for
me. I feel that way.
I know a lot of people do it. It's not that I necessarily feel in danger per se, but I think in those environments, I just like to be aware of my surroundings a little bit more. Also, trying to navigate the subway
with extra sensory stuff.
With like extra sound. You know, you need to turn the sound down to focus.
I agree. That's like,
so I would kind of agree with that. I think it's made me more aware of people and things. And I think aware of how disconnected everybody is. Because just because I don't have my headphones in, like I'm on my phone.
Right, right. And need the extra level.
Yeah, sometimes I'll look up and realize like, like probably 50 people just got up and got off and came on without me even noticing. And I think that's a weird experience to realize.
Well, I even when I was taking the train yesterday here, like I was wearing headphones and I could have very easily missed my train stop.
Yeah.
And also missed getting on the train because I just like zone out really quickly and like lose space and time easily.
That's not surprising though.
This, I don't know. This person goes in quotes, overstimulation, quotes, sensory issues. People say, and she's sort of saying like, headphones are a useful tool if you have this. But like, she claims that evidence suggests that wearing headphones causes a sharp rise in reported auditory processing issues. This is, they're claiming that they're causing young people to have hearing problems.
Well, I mean, that is
true. I mean, yeah, if you're
blasting.
Yeah. I think she's sort of loosely, like, yeah. So I think my overall thoughts are we have bigger problems than people wearing headphones.
I think
if you want to navigate the subway and public transportation, well, it's probably good to not have
or at least headphones to understand that you're going to need to, like, tap back in to your surroundings every now and then. I don't know. I think living right, because I essentially live right on the edge of New York City, and so I can go in and out as I please, which is nice. But I like being in it, like being aware of it. I think that's something that I've learned in not having my headphones is the first little bit, it was literally like to pay attention to figure out where I was going and navigating and things. But now that I am a little bit more familiar with certain areas and neighborhoods, I like just kind of like being in the milieu of it and the sounds and not the smells, but like the sounds and the vibe and, you know, the sights and it just kind of allowing yourself to get lost in a place. I think I like that.
Yeah, that's how I feel too. I don't believe that there is a direct correlation not. This lady also didn't give any evidence besides auditory hearing issues, which is not connected to what she was saying.
That has nothing to do with paying attention.
So,
no.
Yeah, I think it's more concerning that we're on our phones.
I think having content
mm-hmm. constantly streaming.
Yes.
Which we've talked about. Like, I think about how there's always words in my head, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I'm reading, I'm looking, I'm listening, Then you're like listening to an audiobook or a podcast. Like,
then you're making sense
the amount of content that is just being injected into us is the problem, not headphones.
I've really gotten into instrumentals.
Yeah.
Lately. Like film scores.
I do like that.
Going next level to the classical music. It is nice sometimes because I agree. You feel you're able to actually connect with your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't feel as like intense because there's still like something else kind of helping you go there.
I agree. I can't write with music, obviously.
No, I can't either.
With, like songs.
I used to think I liked doing that. And then all of a sudden the other day when I was writing my Substack, I realized because my mood changes a lot mm-hmm. with music
mm-hmm.
and it's hard to.
There's one. This is actually a really funny story. When I wrote my first book or my workbook, mm-hmm. I think my workbook. I listen to one specific song. Like I can sometimes get into it if the song has enough instrumental mm-hmm. beats and stuff and it doesn't have like too many words. And I got into one and it was a song I would listen to over and over. Like if I repeat a song, sometimes I can get there. And it was a song by this artist, Quinn XCX.
Mm.
And what is so funny is this was like, I think in 2022 and he was like my second top artist and I had no idea who this person was. Just and I'm just like, oh,
floated right by.
But
you.
That's how many times I listened to that song as I was writing the book. So,
wow,
there you go.
Ooh, how to be a better critical thinker?
Mm.
I feel like this one could use an entire episode, but I feel like for that it would be interesting for us to get like an educator as a guest.
I agree.
This is something I have actually been challenging in myself
mm-hmm.
because I started to notice that even when I would read, I would skim. And I would kind of like jump things, which I think there is truth to speed reading or trying to process a lot of information at once. What I realized is I don't have to be doing that all the time
mm.
to allow myself to slow down and force my brain into like a measured pace rather than feeling like I have to go from thing to thing. I've been really trying to read longer books, different types of books. I try to read articles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't just read like summaries. Yep. I try to read the entirety of the article. I've tried to read more Substacks
mm-hmm.
rather than just like seeing people's notes or people's high level thoughts of something.
Yep.
I'm trying to spend more time being in reading
mm-hmm.
and then thinking about the reading.
Yeah.
And not just kind of going on my first impression or my first gut reaction, but mm-hmm. allowing my brain space to actually wrestle mm-hmm. with some of the ideas. And if I don't agree with something, I'll challenge myself in my head and be like, why?
Yeah.
Like, why am I not liking this? Why does this make me feel uncomfortable? And it's not in a way of saying I'm trying to force my mind to change or I just want to be disagreeable. I think it's forcing ourselves into argument mm-hmm. about what we think.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think high level, we've now gotten so good at arguing with others about their opinions.
Mm-hmm.
We're not challenging ourselves on an individual level. And so I've been trying to do that more. I think those are my
high level thoughts. I think that makes a lot of sense. I also, you know, think I've become a better critical thinker since scrolling on Instagram for scrolling on Substack. I think too, trying to read things that you actually like sort of disagree with to go through that thought process of why you disagree with it mm-hmm. and things like that. Because I think what's so interesting that people don't talk about with critical thinking is some of it is like physical body management.
Yes.
You know, like when you're reading something you really disagree with that you don't like, your body reacts. So you have to also learn how to deal with that. And I think that erosion is also something because we're so curated, because we're not exposed to different things, we can't physically tolerate thinking about something in a different way. It feels like such an assault on our identity. I mean, right. I guess now that I'm thinking about it, we did have Matthew Facciani come on and pretty much talk about, he talked about misinformation.
Yeah.
But
he talked about sitting.
He did talk about critical thinking how to look at different sources. I think so much of critical thinking is being willing to be wrong, being willing to learn, being humble enough to recognize that you don't know everything, and giving up sort of being right. Like, I think we get so addicted to feeling righteous.
I know, because I spent years in a religion that told me I was more righteous than other because of what I believed. Because I was a part of this group.
Yeah.
So, like, I was thus better.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's intoxicating a little bit. I think, we had this conversation maybe yesterday, I think, where I said what people aren't prepared for, if you look at it in the United States specifically, I do think globally in some ways, but in the United States specifically, the disaster that we're living through right now, I think what's hard is on the other side of this, any of the solutions that would actually be helpful, somebody's going to be mad. Somebody's going to be mad. Somebody's going to be disappointed. And the goal with compromise and finding solutions that actually work is that everybody is going to feel a little mad. Everybody is going to have to feel like they gave up on something in lieu of the greater good.
Yep.
But I think what is missing is these critical thinking muscles have atrophied. And in order for you to come to terms with what you are okay with compromising on, you have to go through some rigorous steps of critical thinking and analyzing a problem and not looking for reasons why you are right or they are wrong or they're better or you're better. It can't be that lens.
Yeah.
It has to be laser focus on the problem itself and all of the solutions and options that could be laid out and figuring out what would feel the most impactful. And all or nothing thinking is not critical thinking.
Yeah.
Thinking errors are not critical thinking. Catastrophizing is not critical thinking. Future casting is not critical thinking. And a lot of people, I think, have started to praise themselves for existing in like the black and white binary. Like, I am always here, so thus I am always good. I am always right.
Yep.
And what I think is adding to the challenge right now is so much of what is under assault are like fundamental human rights. So it is confusing because it's like, no, like everybody deserves the right to vote. Like, that's not what I'm talking about here, right? I think anything to do with like immigration, like people have human rights, like the law is the law, like holding people accountable with the Epstein files, like there should be legal accountability for these things. So it's hard because there's these higher level elements where it's like, yeah, that is kind of all or nothing.
Yeah. Right?
Like, you either believe in human rights or you don't.
Right.
But then underneath that, I think even if you look at climate policy.
Yeah.
Something in that way, like environmental policy, there's a lot of different options and solutions for things that we could do.
Yeah.
And looking at science and figuring out what the science says. And there's room for compromise on something like that. But then people apply these like higher level, like human rights concepts to these policy problems. So I think on, because I am somebody that, this will come as a surprise to no one, identifies strongly with left-leaning policies. And I think as I look at our side of the world and what's tripping us up, I think we are way too focused on trying to hold everybody to a standard that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
The problem is because we are all naturally imperfect, flawed little animals, someone is going to do something that disappoints you, and someone is going to make mistakes, and someone is going to have said something that they changed their mind on in the future. But if you decide you have a problem with what they said in the past, you're never going to be able to move forward. And I think we're trapped in this self-defeating cycle because nobody wants to look at it critically. Because they want to be right, because the algorithm tells them they have to stand there and advocate for how right they are in order to get attention to what they're posting. And we're just trapped in this conundrum right now, I think.
I think we confuse certainty
with
intelligence.
Ooh.
And I think the more you know, the more you know you don't know. And I think the problem is social media and the internet gives now ChatGPT, you know, AI even more.
Yeah.
It gives everyone the illusion that they are an expert on everything.
Right.
And that's what's scary about it is when you know, I don't, there's like a concept of like a window or some sort of, I don't
the
know.
The Overton window. No.
That's like shifting yeah, things. Shifting. This is more just like when you only know, I think 10 or 20% of something, you know enough to think that you know everything, but like you don't yeah. know enough
right.
to know how little you know. Mm. And I think that is like a society-wide
problem
where we all read an article or especially because we like are inundated with lots of the same topic, mm-hmm. but never deep dive into it, mm-mm. which gives you the illusion because you lightly know the headlines that you know what's going on, but you never actually are deep enough to know that there are tons of other options, or you're not in, you don't learn enough from other people who, you know, have different opinions than you. Or even I think there's this idea that like, because everyone's worried about being brainwashed on the internet, which like fair, you know, I don't, yeah. I have a child and I am like concerned about her being brainwashed
right.
too.
Right.
But also like we have to develop the muscle to be able to be exposed to other ideas without crumbling. Otherwise, do we actually – like if the only way you can believe what you believe is in your own echo chamber without anyone pushing you, do you really even believe that? Do you – that doesn't have any teeth. So yeah. I think we have to – instead of it being like people are scared to interact with other people who think things differently, or we also sort of like purity contest our way to death of right. like I'm the most pure, I'm the most, you know, right.
right. Yeah.
Then like instead of I respect people way more when they engage with nuance and when they same. Say, hey, actually, I don't know enough about this topic. But because of algorithms, you also right, don't see those people or you don't see those takes as much.
Right.
So we have no model also of people being like, I changed my mind or mm-hmm. I don't 100% agree with this person or whatever it is.
I also think we've lost the art of conversation mm-hmm. in like relation to what you just said of like being able to even tolerate a discussion with somebody that you know you don't agree with or somebody that you don't understand mm-hmm. fully their point of view. And I think what's so hard is it's like, I'm not talking about trying to understand Nick Fuentes,
yeah.
right? Like that, someone like that at that edge is like, I don't need to know why you think it's great to celebrate Stalin's birthday. Like,
yeah.
I don't need to talk to you about that. You are lost and there's something else we need to do with yeah. you. And I don't know what that is, but it's not talking.
Yep.
However, like a family member that is just like so rigid in their individualism of thinking like, well, like I want to help people, but I don't think it should be the government or, you know, well, why is it my job to pay for somebody's, mm-hmm. you know, services when I figured out how to work hard and pay for that on my own? Like people that think those things, I think I'm going to hold your hand when I say this, that's not a bad person. Mm. And the reason I'm saying that is because that was like my dad
yeah.
for a really long time. And even in some like a pretty like I think everybody should just have should not pay taxes. Like that's kind of my
yeah.
dad's thing. Like
yeah.
just give people their money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they'll figure out what to do with it. And I'm like, well, it's whatever. I spent years and years and years like introducing my dad to these concepts. And I know that there's a lot of people that are like, well, I don't want to talk to any of these people that think these things or these ways. And it's like, sure, like if your aunt comes out as an avowed Nazi, please, by all means, like disregard. But if they're like disagreeing on policy or if they're like, well, I don't understand, like wind farms are dumb or,
yeah.
you know, these more – or if they don't understand the healthcare system or – how things work or how insurance jacks up the prices on things on purpose because it's a business, that's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I know it's frustrating to sit with somebody that doesn't understand something and somebody that is proud of not understanding something, but that is an opportunity for you in relation to practicing your critical thinking skills and your cognitive dissonance and your emotional regulation, your distress regulation. And you might be the only tie that someone has to that type of information.
Yep.
you might be the only access point that they have, and more importantly, trust to have some of those things explained to them in a different way. Mm-hmm. And if we are going to move forward from this place that we find ourselves in, I'm really encouraging each of you to find somebody in your life that you know and have a half-decent relationship with where you could start engaging in those more meaningful discussions. Mm-hmm. It's not like a, here's all the ways I'm going to tell you why you're dumb or you're stupid or you're an idiot. Not that. Even, and it's your freedom to think that while you talk to them. Mm-hmm. Like, you can think whatever you want.
Yeah.
But to allow yourself the space to figure out, like, can I actually articulate these things? Mm-hmm. Do I understand these points enough to be able to talk about it mm-hmm. with someone and educate someone else on it? Like, that's the key for you.
Yeah.
Do you understand it enough to be able to teach it? And I think some of us are going to have to humble ourselves in the conversations that we're going to start to have, especially in the next year leading up to midterms. And I think the next 3 years leading up to the next presidential election, like, if we really want to build something better, if we really want to reframe this country in a way that feels like it actually lives up to its promises, that's going to require some of us stepping down from our white ivory towers and learning that we have to bring some of these people with us in this process.
I agree.
Next. That's all.
Hi, Amanda. I'd love to hear your and Sam's thoughts on this. I have limited family connections and have been working really hard to make connections and friends where I live, joining clubs, sports, teams, going out of my way to meet people. I've made social connections and friends, but it feels like most people aren't interested in deeper friendship. My guess is because they have already met that need already by family, etc., in their lives. I feel like I need deeper connections with folks around me because I don't have family I can reach out to for support when times are hard. I'm trying to foster this. I know it takes time, but I'm struggling with feeling like my needs and interests and relationships are somewhat mismatched. I.e., I'm trying to create a deeper community, and most folks I know seem to want people to hang out with every once in a while.
Mm. This is hard, especially if you feel like just at a baseline, your life circumstances, your interests, your goals are just completely different mm-hmm. from the majority. Like, that's really hard.
Yeah.
And I think what's even harder is there's no specific answer. Like, I mean, I had to go to the extreme of moving.
Yes.
Like, I literally had to leave where I was because I realized it was such a bad fit.
Yeah.
And I don't know your life circumstance.
Right.
I don't know what this person's specific situation is. And I'm not saying that that's the only option.
Well, especially if family isn't tying you to where you live. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, maybe your job is and you get a lot of,
yeah.
you know, that's really important, obviously.
Right.
But, I mean, it sounds like maybe she just moved because she's been trying to meet new people and yeah. stuff like that. But I mean, I would imagine, Sam, you can talk about this more than me too. And I feel it on the other side of sort of like, my life is very full right now because of having a child and things like that. And I think it is hard because I know that I don't have tons of space in my life. And
for other people.
Yeah. Especially
or new people.
Yeah. And especially like, I mean, I only moved to Florida a couple of years ago, so I'm still trying to make friends, but I don't have a ton of space, I think, in my life for people that aren't in the same life stage as me, just because it's much easier for me to get together with someone who, like, we can bring our kids to,
right.
or we can do something, like, random and specific, or if, like, your schedule allows for, like, me to go on a walk with you or something like that, you know? I think that's what's challenging is people in different life phases. It's not even about you. It's not about the person, but it's the circumstances, and it sucks.
It really does.
Yeah.
And it's hard. And I think it's the feature, not the bug, of modern life yeah. that a lot of people are really struggling with.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have a suggestion, and it's not the fun one, and it's not an easy one, but this was revolutionary for me in really lonely times in my life, which was I actually really figured out how to enjoy my own company. And connection matters. Spending time with people matters, and it's important. But never underestimate the importance of liking spending time with you. And if there are things that you want to try or things that you want to do, go do those things. And I'm not telling you to capitulate completely and shut yourself off and never try again, but give yourself a break in, like, instead of assuming that this has to be whatever it is that you're talking about in your life, that this has to be like a group effort. Mm-hmm. Let yourself do things by yourself. And something that was revolutionary for me was last summer when I spent 4 days in Scotland by myself. And I was really nervous when I got to the train station and my sister and I went two different directions because I had never done a solo trip before. I had done like one-on-one trips with friends and things. Mm-hmm. I haven't always done like, I've done some big group trips, but I'd never been completely by myself. Mm-hmm. And I realized that it was amazing because I could do whatever I wanted. Yeah. And I realized I'm somebody that I like kind of a mid-afternoon like hotel pit stop.
Yep.
Kind of going, getting rearranged, figuring out what you're going to do, then going back out. I loved just picking whatever I wanted. I planned whatever I wanted and I did the things that mattered to me and I nerded out. And I know if I had brought someone like Amanda, we would have had to capitulate on that a little bit. The moral of that story is keep trying to connect with people. You never know. I mean, like Amanda and I are in completely different phases of life mm-hmm. and we're very close. Mm-hmm. I'll speak for the both of us. We're very good friends. And we make it work. And we
Yeah. Or do you have friends that live other places? Can you go travel to them?
Yeah. Take a trip. Ask them if they want to come to you. Do you want to go to them? But then I think in the midst of that, you get to live your life too. And I know like sometimes you're going to have moments where it's like, I wish I had somebody else. I wish I could do something, blah, blah, blah. But your life is happening now. And doing things on your own is not a failure. I actually think it's an insane level of confidence. And I think it builds a sense of confidence in who you are and what you like to do and the things that matter to you. And that helps you bring an even more clear, cogent version of yourself to someone in a friendship or a relationship, whatever the connection is. So just keep on keeping on. I know it's really hard, but make sure that you're not necessarily waiting for other people to live your life or find other ways to fulfill different parts of you while you're building that.
All right. If you're listening to this and feeling like something is landing, like you keep hearing yourself in what Sam and I are talking about, I want you to pay attention to that because when that happens, it's not a coincidence. And if you've been thinking about therapy, but you've really had not great luck, you want someone who gets it, not just clinically, but personally, I want to share with you about my practice, Therapy for Women Center. All of our therapists have actually been through the things we treat, whether that's trauma, anxiety, eating disorders, parenthood. When you're sitting there and talking about hard things, you know that the person on the other side really gets it. That's really why I started my practice because I was sick of going to therapists who didn't fully understand the things that they were treating. At this point, we have over 30 therapists and we actually hand match you to the right one based on what you're going through. And if we don't get the match right, we'll waive your intake fee and help you switch to another therapist in the practice. We really feel like finding the right therapist shouldn't feel like another thing to white knuckle through. When you reach out to us, you can talk to our intake coordinator, you can email us, you can text us. We'd love to hear from you. We serve 42 states online, in person in the Philadelphia area, but right now we have immediate openings in North Carolina, Arizona, Florida, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and many more, South Carolina, Ohio. We'd love to support you if you're looking for a new therapist. Reach out to us at therapyforwomencenter.com or you can text us at 215-847-6749.
All right. And then I think to round out the episode, the last question we're going to do is there was an article that came out in New York Magazine about how Mormons have infiltrated pop culture and the people want to know what Sam thinks about that.
It was their grand plan all along. I also think, though, the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives women, and I would – maybe this is giving them credit or maybe it's being judgmental of them. I don't know. You get to decide. They're not really Mormon.
I agree.
Same with Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. Yeah, that is Real sort Housewives of the thing. Of Salt Lake City.
Like, I would be the first to say in advocating for your run-of-the-mill Mormons, none of these women that are on reality TV are what I would consider. And again, everybody gets to align how they want to, but I think we can all see that there is a lot of flexibility with how they live, decisions they make, things and behaviors that they engage with, that I would find the vast majority of Mormons I've ever interacted with don't do to yeah. that level, to the level that I think some of these women are. So I know, like, I follow Jesse and Taylor mm-hmm. on socials. I know Taylor, like, still takes her kids to church. There's a part of me that's like, why? But she gets to do whatever she wants. Yeah. So I guess, like, I think what appeals to the outsider to the Mormon religion is the confusion of how strict it is, because people present as normal, right? Like, we dress normal, we're in the world, mm-hmm. we do things, we don't have restrictions of where we can and can't go, right? Like,
yeah.
We're raised, quote unquote, normal. We go to school, we do whatever. But then we have this really insane, like, rule system that we have to follow mm-hmm. and live by. And I think it's fascinating to people. I think it's confusing and it's fascinating, and they don't.
They want to be one foot in, one foot out.
Yeah, they want to be one foot in, one foot out. And they want to be able to say, like, well, I never said anything bad about the church, right?
Yeah.
And because that is what, like, pisses people off inside of the church, is when you speak poorly of it. They'll have this tolerance of you deciding you don't believe in it or you don't want to be a part of it anymore. It's when you start to be negative about it or explore it in a negative light on a public scale mm-hmm. that run-of-the-mill Mormons really panic. Mm-hmm. That's kind of when the groupthink comes in and it's like, no, we have to protect mm-hmm. it. Like, I have to advocate for this. This is Christ's church and I have to be respectful of yeah. that and protect it. So I don't know, but I just think what is frustrating, having been someone that lived in it, fully a part of it, and then now outside of it and watching these women live life this way, it is so frustrating because the universal themes of patriarchy, misogyny, shame, sexual abuse, sexual misconduct, all of these themes are, like, right in our faces and nobody's talking about it.
Yeah.
At all. And I think sometimes with watching the show, that is what I struggle with, is for me, because I lived that life so intimately, I struggle to separate.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of people that are able to just watch it for entertainment. But what is difficult for me is I experienced harm from some of these things. And I know people who have been harmed far worse than I would even say I was by living and operating this way. And I think one of the biggest glaring ones that I can point to is Michaela's situation with her husband. Yeah. That one, I'm just like, we glossed right over that one, like right over that one, that in the state of Utah, a 16-year-old cannot legally consent with a 21-year-old. Yeah. And that is what happened. And she then got pregnant at 17 and her parents signed off on it. And that's not some magical thing that makes it okay. It might've made it legal at that point. But I just have a hard time. And I think that EMDR session mm-hmm. in the season was particularly frustrating because I think it was so devoid of, like, nuance or purpose.
Yeah.
And I was really fascinated that the therapist chose to show that, because to me, I'm like, you look like a bad therapist. Mm-hmm. Like, you look like you're skating right past the root of the issues.
Yep.
And not really talking about why she's so bothered and upset mm-hmm. by these things. But the problem is, like, you pull on that thread, her whole life is going to unravel. So,
yeah.
And not everybody is prepared to do that. And a lot of people won't do that and don't want to, and that's fine. But I think in terms of, like, Mormons infiltrating pop culture, I just think we are, it's very easy to commoditize us and other us in, like, a cool way. Mm. And we like it. Well, people in the church kind of like it because it's this like, see, like we're cool, we're normal, yeah. like, ha ha ha, like, yeah. But I just choose to live differently than you.
Yeah.
And so there's a normalization of it, mm-hmm. which like is fine. Everybody gets to be whatever religion they would like mm-hmm. and live their life however they want. It's not that. With Mormons, though, there is this emphasis of my job is to bring you in.
Mm.
That's the that is it's not even just being around someone who's Catholic or Muslim or Jewish or mm-hmm. Protestant or even evangelical. Mormons are particularly focused on introducing people to the church and bringing them in.
Yeah.
That is a huge component of it. They want to bring you into it. They see there's no reason why you should be outside of it. If you know them and like them and think that it's cool how they live their life, you should be wanting to come in
yep.
to that space. And the whole point is like keeping that door open to people that like, you know, you want to introduce them to like the love of Christ. And this bizarre obsession with like Mormons have a glow. They're so happy. They're just, I'm like, yeah, that's just like emotional detachment.
Well, I also think like to give credit to Heather Gay,
yeah.
who
yeah, yeah, yeah.
right is on Real Housewives of Salt Lake yeah. City. She actually like married into Mormon royalty, as she says, and fully left the church, was yeah. shunned yeah. really for leaving. Her husband didn't provide very much money no. to her. She had to build a business from scratch. She really, I give her a lot of credit. Yeah. She really, and she had a problem with, I think, in the first season when it first started 5 years ago, Lisa Barlow saying that Lisa said she was Mormon, but she owns a tequila company yeah. and she drinks. And she was like, Mormon is a way of life. And
yeah.
I think someone asked her on the recent reunion, like where she was from. And she was like, I'm not from Utah. I'm from New York. And like, she didn't live in New York that long. Like, it's very silly. So I think probably Heather's frustration and a lot of, I think this is what you're kind of saying too, is like a lot of people like to be half in, half out and use it for clout, but also discard what doesn't work for them. Right. But most people don't have that luxury of doing that right. because they would be shunned from their family, their churches, their communities, correct. Whatever.
Correct.
And it's not fair, like how it sort of is, you know, you get to pick and choose what works for you yeah. at the harm of
yeah.
other people.
See, I think Heather Gay has been far more realistic about her experience. And I wouldn't
she
even,
was
like,
honest. She was she's honest. Wrote books about it. Yeah. Absolutely. I think she's a she good example of someone who
yes.
did it. And yes. then it's like, it's not what Secret Lives is Mormon Wives.
Yes. I think Heather Gay has been very honest about the ramifications of her decisions. And I think the women in Secret Lives of Mormon Wives are not. Mm-hmm. They're not. The only ones that like kind of came close were Zach and Jen.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, they still like skated right past it. So that's just what I have a hard time with. I mean, I think Jessie's really impressive because she did have a legitimate business. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember hearing about Jay-Z Styles when I lived yeah. there before the show was like even a thing. I know exactly where her salon is on State Street and drove past it a ton of times. So I think that's why I have more respect for her. And I also think I have the most respect for Taylor as well, because I think Taylor has been the most authentic mm-hmm. in how she lives. And she's been the most honest about her disastrous relationship with Dakota and everything that happened with her ex and, you know, the shame of that. I think she's shown more of that tension of how to live both worlds mm-hmm. than some of the others have. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's a show that I have a complicated relationship with the show, and it comes out every time I watch it. And sometimes it's kind of hard mm-hmm. for me too. It's not like fun and like, mm-hmm. it's not like watching like Vanderpump Rules or something or Love Island or mm-hmm. even the Housewives franchises. There's something about Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. Well, I know what it is, but it's a difficult watch for me. Mm-hmm. It's not. Like a lot of people are like, oh my God, like it's so funny. Like the drama is insane. Mm-hmm. And I have to like prep myself before I watch to be like, you don't have to fix this. You don't have to call out like what's going on. Like you can just watch it. Mm-hmm. But I have to be in like a very specific headspace for that. Mm-hmm.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks so much for listening. Let us know if you like this format of kind of doing a couple different things. If you can believe it, we recorded a whole nother hour about other more controversial opinions we have and answering other questions. Mm-hmm. That's on Substack. If you want to head over there, nuancenedded.substack.com.
Yeah. And as per usual, anything you can do to get the word out. Reviews are huge for helping people find the show. That is what tells the algorithm of Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen that this is a show that people like. So if you could leave us a review, that would be lovely, or leave us a comment. Share with anybody that you know if this resonated with you in any way.
See you next week.